sweat dripping, I leapt from my bunk to reveille blasting in my ear louder than usual. Then silence. The ship's engines cut their gentle hum. Bombay, I'd arrived. From the porthole, hurricane lamplight pinpricked the darkness. It was not yet dawn. An orderly knocked. All packed, sir. A mass of khaki-clad troops streaming down the gangway onto Ballard Pier were swallowed by the chaotic whirlpool of men searching for their groups. I shuffled hesitantly down the gangplank with no idea of where to assemble or how to find my own draft of men. I approached my platoon sergeant on the quay, interrupting his bellowed directions. Enlisted men, assembly point C7, transport, assembly point D. Leave the men to me, Captain, sir. Officers transport, that sign there, Majestic Hotel. Saluting, he pointed, shooing me away like a fly. I caught the Delhi train at 6 next morning. I'd just settled myself by a corner window when two stereotypically loud-mouthed officers stormed my carriage. Nothing Indian escaped their ignorant disdain. Pretending a hangover, I turned my back, pressing my forehead against the glass, and stared out of the carriage window, determined to see only India's magic. An old-timer, Major Attiel, occupied the fourth bunk. He, too, studiously buried himself in his own thoughts. For the next 3 days, I surrendered to my role of voyeur as lessons in geography, religion, agriculture, anthropology, and architecture rolled through my moving screen. I dozed often. Major Attiel's fierce-looking Pathan bearer, Ahmed, had to tend the four of us. Neither I nor the two officers had yet been allocated bearers of our own. Ahmed let down and made up our bunks, laid out fresh clothes, brewed us chai in his attached open-sided servant's carriage, and generally did for his sahibs. Whenever the train entered a tunnel, he'd spring into action, slamming shut the blinds and windows in an ever-losing battle against glowing smuts. Somehow they sneaked past his guard to blow back and prick our skin, clothing, and cover every surface with gritty soot, till by evening we looked like coal miners after a long shift underground. Trains then had no corridor, so reaching the dining car involved a stroll along the platform. Victorian Raj style at its best, the dining car was a mix of elegance and tawdry ornate rococo gilt, mahogany, velvet curtains, and cranberry pink glass candelabra. We ate with silver plate knives and forks from monogrammed plates set on damask tablecloth. We sipped wine, served from decanters, resting in silver coasters. From behind the window lace, I observed coal-smudged, sweaty second- and third-class passengers and the British engine drivers dash for the station's refreshment rooms at each stop. No meal break for the Indian stokers, no respite for them. They continued shoveling coal and taking on water. The second day, an alarming grinding metal against metal and hiss of steam startled me awake. It seemed we were suspended in midair. The locomotive's two powerful engines inched out over a breath-stopping ravine on a wooden bridge, so flimsy I expected to be pitched into the raging river far below. I couldn't quite explain the feelings I experienced. It was a vague glimmer of some connection, a sense of being winched link by link from a mysterious depth. My skin tingled and I shivered. I felt my family crowding close. I thought of mother's train travels half a century earlier, her suffering stifled in layered, tightly laced, long-sleeved gowns with only a block of fast-melting ice fanned by her servant to alleviate heat. Our first class at least boasted an electric fan. I turned each cheek in turn toward the faint cooling vapor wafting from the large block of ice in our carriage. With much shouting and commotion, two extra engines were coupled behind the last carriage before tackling the Western Ghats. The pistons seemed to groan as the engines struggled to crank their snaking burden up toward the mountain pass. The train was so slow, adventurous passengers jumped off on one arm of the zigzag track, strolled across the open ground, and remounted the train on the other bend. I was tempted to join them, but too un-officer-like, I decided. One time, a group of teenage fellow travellers leapt from their carriage and, using the train as their wicket, competed to score the most runs by touching first a carriage on one side of the Z, then the other, egged on by cheering passengers. At last, the train topped out, squeezing through the narrow tunnel blasted through the rock face by Welsh miners half a century before. Then, after one galloping descent to the plains, we were rumbling over the River Dot and pulling into Delhi's red-brick Victorian Gothic station. The train was still drawing into the platform when the carriage door flew open and a horde of coolies stormed our carriage, literally fighting to porter our baggage. With neither Hindi nor Urdu to control such a crowd, it was hopeless. "Oh! Arret! Basta! Stop!" Italian, French, English, horse commands even. I shouted in vain. My bags vanished, every piece, gone to Major Athill and the two subalterns, swallowed in the melee. I was on my own. The railway police came to my rescue, brandishing vicious metal-tipped bamboo lathis. In a masterful matter of minutes, I learned my bags were already safely stowed on the Calcutta mail across the platform, where the waiting iron My bags vanished, every piece gone to Major Athill and two subalterns, swallowed in the melee. I was on my own. The railway police came to my rescue, brandishing vicious metal-tipped bamboo lathis. In a masterful matter of minutes, I learned my bags were already safely stowed on the Calcutta mail across the platform, where the waiting iron engine, belching soot and smoke, got up steam, preparing for the next leg.
"Old Best Rose! Pleasure to have made your acquaintance."
Major Athill shook my hand firmly, and with a wave my tour guide was gone. Dismounting, my nostrils flared in the unaccustomed higher altitude. My teeth felt cool to my tongue. The sun had not yet risen above the mountain peaks. The Fyazabad train on the branch line left late afternoon. It was my chance to explore the ancient, once glorious city of the kings of Oud, the Lucknow Major Athill raved about.
"British club, sahib?"
The Tonga driver assumed it was a statement rather than a question.
"Pearl Palace, hurry."
The sky was brightening. I wanted to catch dawn's rays transform the inlaid pearl dome of the palace.
"Like a lotus opening petals to the sun," Major Athill had eulogized.
He was right. It was a lotus. Pearl tinged to pink. Pink blazed to gold. Next, with a flick of the driver's whip and a dring of his handbell, the horse-drawn Tonga clip-clopped through the bustling city at a good lick, though not fast enough to keep the swarms of flies settling on my face and creeping up my nose. By 10 I'd had enough. The mud walls edging the streets trapped the heat, and the harsh light erased the building's fine details. I sat stupefied under a mulberry tree in the gardens of Begum Hazrat Park, too hot to move. But there was still one last stop I needed to make. The ruins of the old British residency. Dismounting the Tonga, my throat tightened. The siege, the screams of massacre so horrifically silenced, bullet scarred, the residency walls brought the bloody tragedy of 1857 to life. The mutiny's brutality, so visible, caught me by surprise. I stiffened to attention, motionless, and instinctively snapped a salute to the tattered Union Jack fluttering over the building. "By command of Queen Victoria, Empress of India," I read the plaque, "to forever fly day and night in honour of the slain." "Chattel Club," I croaked to the Tonga driver. The club, once a palace of the House of Oud, cocooned me deep within its walls. Thankful of my own company, I chose a cane lounger in the corner, quietly resting, recovering. New to India, new to the club, a stranger, I was left to myself. I ate a somber lunch in one of the ornately scrolled and gilded rooms where courtiers had served their kings. Too many thoughts, too many images running. 70 short miles north, the Fyazabad remained. 1,500 miles of travel from Bombay, the train journey was over. I stepped onto Fyazabad's platform. My journey began.